Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to the second call-out show.
Of Ancast,
yes. Yeah, because people don't know what the show is. Because they're flipping around on the radio and this is going to be on. So I better identify it.
Maybe some college radio station is just running some guy's random iTunes.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's someone out there running some kind of weird pirate radio station where they're just running podcasts.
I'm sure. I think CBS has actually done that.
Really? Yes. Maybe that's why they bought Adam Carolla out. Man, we're getting ready to go to Japan next week.
Yeah, I've been just running around like crazy, but it's been a crazy week, even if I hadn't been preparing.
Oh, yeah. You went and did something pretty unique last weekend.
Well, had a car accident, but...
Oh, there was that, too.
No, but yeah, I went with Bamboo and our friend Sarah, and who also helps out with the site a bit.
Yeah.
And we went bungee jumping.
Hooray.
It's, it's a little weirder when I add that I'm scared of heights.
Okay.
And it was just my idea. I just felt like I needed to mix it up a bit. So, this bungee jumping, the only place to do it in Southern California is in the Angeles National Forest. And this company called Bungee America takes you out, and it's a 5-mile hike either way in the forest this is a really craggy, difficult mountain trail. You're fording rivers that are rushing. There are rapids, and it's like 4 feet deep of freezing, freshly melted mountain snow.
Man.
You're just kind of inching along these steep precipices where, like, you just, like, don't look down.
Jesus.
All to fling yourself off a bridge.
Right. So if you're not terrified by the time you get there.
Yeah. Except because it was 80 people, we had to wait a long time, and that bridge was freezing.
Really? 80 people?
Oh, yeah. This was a big group. Wow. Mostly annoying college kids. They looked really, really like the sort of people I would avoid normally.
Yeah.
But it was fun in retrospect, if not fun in practice.
Hmm. Well, yeah, it's one of those things that's not like you're having a good time. It's more like it's just tough and you're managing it, so.
Those rivers were fucking brutal.
Yeah.
That was as bad as the jump. The jump itself was really scary. You try to prepare yourself. You try to, you know, mentally imagine what it's like. You can't imagine it. You can't prepare yourself. It's just terrifying. It feels like you fell out of a building.
Did you do it once or twice?
Twice.
Yeah.
It's funny. They make you go out of peer pressure.
Really?
They have everyone count down for everyone. So by the time you get to five, you feel, well, I made fun of the other people for hesitating. I guess I'd better let go. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like super fun. I spent my Saturday playing Final Fantasy.
You win.
So sad.
I would say you win. In retrospect, I probably would have done that.
Yeah, really. Oh my god, I'm so exhausted. So we're going to be taping the show from Japan next week, so that should be fun. We're going to try to get Christopher McDonald drunk enough to come and be on the podcast
this
with us.
This will require a lot of Baileys.
Yeah, lots of Baileys. I don't know if they sell Smirnoff Ice in Japan, but we can try to find it. So that's our goal for next week. But I wanted to mention that this past weekend HBO debuted The Pacific, which is Band of Brothers 2, Japan edition, or whatever.
Starring the kid from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, starring Joseph Mazzello. And I have to say, like, I watched it, and I'm not a huge fan of war stuff. I mean, I enjoyed Saving Private Ryan, and I liked the movie Jarhead a lot. I thought that was pretty good. And this seemed like, okay, it's another HBO miniseries, you know, with Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks. But I have to say, like, we're headed to Japan on Sunday. This coming Sunday, March the 21st. And it was pretty awkward. Little awkward watching this one. Because the bad guy's the Japanese. And everybody's slinging out all these racial slurs and shooting the shit out of the Japanese soldiers. And it's like, oh, that's right. Once these people were our mortal enemies.
I grew up in Detroit in the 80s.
Okay.
I'm pretty immune to anti-Japanese sentiment.
Well, was that a thing then?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. Lee Iacocca basically led a by American Crusade where, like, my family was literally kind of scared because everyone was so mad at the Japanese.
Oh, because of the car manufacturing thing.
Right.
Okay, right. I just connected those dots in my head. It's been a long day.
yeah, so, you know, when I was growing up, everyone hated the Japanese. So, you know, it's only natural that I gravitated towards their pop culture.
The show is pretty brutal, though. So, I mean, the scene where the soldier comes out and is, like, begging them to kill him and stuff.
By the way, that guy had a thick American accent.
Yeah, he did. But anyway, it was kind of awkward watching that. And a little, I hate to say funny, but it was kind of funny because it's like, oh, man, these people. World War II. Forgot about that.
And grown up Joe Mazzello looks like a big-eyed, innocent Ron Livingston.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do want to mention that I saw the list of the credits for the people who did the score. And it was like Hans Zimmer and like two other people.
That score drove me batshit.
Well, it made me laugh out loud because anyone at this point could write a score for a war movie that Steven Spielberg was a part of. All you need is some violins and a cornet. And have the violins being like, and then the cornet has to come in.
Yeah, you could change it out with like a Ken Burns documentary score. All you have to do is you have to take out all of the interesting tracks.
And there's a banjo in there somewhere.
But this is one thing I really dislike about some American drama that makes me appreciate the Japanese stuff I watch that much more. I really am sick of being clubbed over the head with how I should feel with a scene.
Right.
I am so sick of, that show was wall-to-wall manipulative music.
Yeah.
Wall-to-wall. And after a while, you get really tired of it.
Did you see Band of Brothers?
No.
It's pretty much the same thing. Except for this one, it's even harder to keep track of who's who because they're all just dirty-looking white guys.
Right.
Wearing the same fatigue. So it's really hard to follow from person to person. Now, I watched it all the way through and thought it was interesting and a little compelling, and I don't know that much about the Pacific Theater of Operations, so sure, I'll watch it. Plus, you know, I'm 30-year-old white guy, so there's probably some weird coding in there that makes me watch that kind of thing, just like I occasionally watch the History Channel and stuff like that.
I don't understand, but go on.
The cliche about that kind of war programming is that it's for white guys who are, like, over 30, over 40. That's the cliche about that kind of stuff. But the extra weird thing is that I will be watching the next two episodes, which are the next two Sundays, while I'm in Japan. So we'll see how bad it gets.
you have fun. I'll be in the next room editing video or something.
Yeah. So the other thing I sort of popped in this week, which I never really got around to watching, was got a big bag of new Blu-rays from Funimation and popped in Ouran High School Hose Club. Which I never got around to. I think I saw like part of the first episode once, and
I really like that show.
I went around watching. Yeah, well, I put this in just to see A, how the video quality was, and you know, B, just I've always been a little more curious about that one in terms of revisiting it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it came out when I was like super burned out, and I liked it.
It's a trifle, but I think it's a fun trifle.
Well, everyone, I went to Twitter and said like, hey, is this worth watching all the way through? And the universal reply was, read the manga. It's better. Manga's way better. Everyone thinks the manga is like way better. I guess according to them, like the characters actually develop in a meaningful way.
I really enjoyed it. I was watching it when it originally came out on Fansub, and then I bought the DVD from Funny when it first came out. I found it likable, compelling, even if the character... I like that there is kind of a harem show that A, knows it's a harem show, B, is ready to just stab its own genre in the face.
Yeah, but how many episodes of that do I need? Because I watched the first, like, two, and I was like, I get it.
Right. There are certain things, like, one of the twins, for example, goes into a direction you're not expecting.
Okay.
The show is not afraid to have some of the Bishonen in it be outright unlikable. Mm. Like, there are a couple characters in there that you're just like, I don't like this person.
Hmm. Well, maybe I'll give it more of a shot. I obviously won't be able to check it out more until I get back, but yeah, I liked it enough to give it more of a chance.
And it made me laugh.
Yeah, well, there you go. I chuckled a few times. I didn't think it was... The satire was a little too obvious.
You're much harder on comedy than...
I am indeed.
Anybody.
But importantly, the video quality. Not sure why they released this on... I mean, I know, because it's a popular show and they want to wring some money out of their Blu-ray releases.
Right.
But it's not even 16:9. The show's 4:3, And it's an upscale, and it's an okay-looking upscale. One of the things is a lot of these shows they're putting out on Blu-ray now are shows that they released back when Funimation was pretty bad at DVD authoring.
Right.
So these look a lot better than the DVDs. They're just not comparable to other animation on Blu-ray.
See, this is... We're getting into the really contentious stuff where people have been genuinely upset about these upscales.
Yeah.
And although I understand to a point, because Funimation hasn't labeled them upscales in any way. You buy them sight unseen like you would with any other DVD product or Blu-ray product. You would expect them to look like Blu-rays.
Right.
And they don't. They look like really... They kind of look like halfway between a DVD and a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
They're an improvement, certainly, but they're not what people are expecting. To the extent that they're being marketed as something they're not, I think kind of damages Funimation's reputation.
Yeah, because and I think only among casual consumers. Because a hardcore consumer can just go online and check. And all you have to do is do a little bit of research to figure it out. Right now, Funimation has like two or three really good-looking Blu-rays. Evangelion, Afro Samurai, and the second season of Gunslinger Girl, I think might be native HD. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. The rest of them kind of look like shitty upscales.
Because they are.
Yeah, specifically, like we popped in Trinity Blood, which was a very cheaply produced show and has terrible animation and mostly looks bad. And if I were to say, like, casual consumers, like, I'm going to try some anime, and they go into a store and they buy Ponyo and they buy Trinity Blood and they go home, guess which one they're going to be really pissed off about, the video quality. Because it doesn't look like a Blu-ray. It looks like a marginally upscaled DVD.
And, well, and to be fair, I took a look at that video, and I don't think I could have done a better job upscaling it.
Well, right. But it still doesn't look like a blue. Like, if you were to just walk into a store and buy it, thinking, I'm going to watch some HD anime.
Yeah, that's really the long and short of the problem. I don't disagree that these should exist. In fact, if I loved a show well enough, I would happily upgrade to the upscale.
Yeah.
They haven't released anything like that yet, but there are a few I would. But I can't blind buy a Funimation DVD Blu-ray, period.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a problem. I can blind buy any Blu-ray from Bandai. Right. I know it'll look good. I can blind buy almost any Hollywood studio Blu-ray release. But I need to research the hell out of a Funimation title before I'll buy it. And that's a huge problem.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the kind of the sad thing is that, well, maybe it's not sad, but it's not really fair to blame them completely. Because this stuff isn't ever going to look better than this. This is as good as it's going to look unless they go back and reanimate the damn things. Because they were produced so cheaply, and it's all digipaint shows, so yeah. There are no HD masters. There is no better source.
Funimation isn't the only one doing this, too. Like, Sony's... I was shocked to find out that I popped in the Advent Children Blu-ray, and that's an upscale.
God.
For I'm not sure the whole thing is an upscale, but most of it is an upscale.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's
a digital film.
Come on, hit render again. It won't kill you.
Yeah.
It might take a few weeks, but...
Yeah, that's kind of sad. Yeah. But at the same time, like, so I guess what we're saying is, like, if you don't already own it, the Blu-ray is the way to go. And if you really love the show and it's one from that era where... And what years would you say people should watch out for?
Probably everything released up until 07-ish.
So everything that they put out before 07.
Yeah, like if they put out a Blu-ray upscale of Fruits Basket, I'd buy it in a heartbeat. Those discs look like ass.
Yeah. Yeah, and so now that they kind of know what they're doing, it's such a weird coincidence. That is such a weird coincidence. Like, now they know what they're doing, but they still don't get any credit because they're releasing Blu-rays that look subpar.
You know, it's funny. This reminds me... CPM kind of went through this, too, when I was there. There was, up until a certain point, every DVD we released looked like crap.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know what we were doing. Then we learned what we were doing, but everyone was still judging us on the last, you know, 5-6 years of releases that people were still freshly buying. And what were we going to do? You know, that's still our product.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk to the first caller.
Now, this is the plan. Get your ass to Mars.
All right, our first caller is Bradley Seamick. You've been on this show once before. You write for anime3000.com and themanime.org, right?
Yes, I do.
Or at least you do sometimes.
Yeah, I'm very busy with this new semester, so I only occasionally turn in some reviews. But come this summer, I should be writing more.
So before we get into the thing you wanted to talk about, have you been watching anything lately?
Yes, I just finished up, I think, what is the favorite show of this A&N cast, Heat Guy J. Or at least y'all keep bringing it up.
I specifically asked you that because I knew you watched that, and I think I'm going to go for some kind of a thing where somehow Heat Guy J gets mentioned in every single episode of this show.
We'll make it a drinking game.
I can't say, I don't think I want to say too much about what I thought about it since I'm writing the review right now. But I can definitely see why Janaeon would pay $70,000 an episode for this series. It looks like it was supposed to be the next big thing for the first five episodes. After that, I can see why it's only kind of moderately popular, if at all.
Are you saying Janaeon?
I think it was Janaeon that licensed it, right?
No, Janaeon. It's not pronounced Janaeon. That's okay. How long have you been saying Janaeon?
I don't know.
what was your topic? What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind?
Today I wanted to talk about something that comes up whenever I'm talking about movies with friends at the local card shop and at the community college. And one of the things, let's say we're talking about Avatar, and they'll say that they really enjoyed it, and I'll say, oh yeah, that was an okay movie. It commonly comes up that I might make a point about how I thought that Avatar had a mediocre script, or how A Serious Man was a really good movie because of this, this, and this. And they'll bring up how they just go to movies so that they can sit back and enjoy them. They don't want to really think about what they're watching. And today I want to kind of make the speech that I've been trying to make to my friends, but I always screw up somehow. So this is kind of my compilation of the points I've been making.
Wait. Before. Please tell me you have notes.
Me?
Yeah. Do you have notes?
No.
Ooh.
No, I didn't write any notes for this beforehand.
All right. I'm waiting for this.
All right. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, you said you had a speech. I didn't know that.
Well,
going
he has no this. Notes, so clearly just...
I say speech, but it'll be short, I promise.
Go ahead. No, that's why we're having you on. So.
Okay. I'll start with an analogy. If you've ever... I'm sure everybody here listens to rock music. Most people won't hear the bass line. That's something that's kind of in the background that most people can't pick out. But once either you start playing the bass or you just learn to start picking out the bass in a song, you can't help but always hear it. That's kind of like what happens whenever you start learning about movies and how they're made. Like whenever you watch a documentary about editing, you'll start to notice not so much whenever a movie is well edited, because you're not supposed to notice that, but whenever a movie does a bad jump cut, it's something you'd normally never think about. But now it's always there and it's something you always see. And that can enhance whenever you're watching a movie. That's part of the reason that I think that whenever people want to watch an anime, they would be better off if they learned about animation, the techniques that are used. I think that would enrich their experience in part. And I'm told that y'all know a lot more about this than I would.
Well, Justin and I are both film students. I mean, yeah. We have our degrees in film, and so that sort of automatically
makes us
snobby. But the thing is that I would contend it's not really snobby. It's just I was taught to look for these things through various classes and stuff like that. So, of course, I'm going to look for them. And that doesn't mean I can't enjoy something just as pure entertainment. I acknowledge Avatar was two-thirds of an entertaining film. I mean, it's hard not to notice all the flaws in the screenplay if you know that... I mean, even like layman can pick up how cliche the script in Avatar was.
It's true. The point of reference I always like to bring up is Boondock Saints.
Ugh.
Everyone who... I've been told by so many people, I love Boondock Saints, but yep. They are almost never people that are educated in film. Everyone that I've ever known who is educated in film, myself included, hates that movie passionately.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because if you've studied editing, if you've studied the way films are structured in any way, the glaringly horrible pacing and editing just smack you in the face with every poorly timed cut.
Yeah.
To the point where it's just unwatchable. It's like if, and to use Bradley's bass guitarist analogy, it's like listening to a pop song and the bass track is literally a guy laying on a key on a keyboard. except it's a discordant note.
Yeah, and while I understand it's like impossible to talk about this without seeming like some kind of pretentious, condescending, snobby dude.
Which I fully admit to being.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to talk about it without seeming like that. But what irritates me are the people that tell you, like, if you're trying to say, like, well, it wasn't very good because of this, this, and this. And they go, why can't you just like things? Why can't you just like it? Why can't you just sit back and, you know, you think about things too much? The day I stop thinking about things, like, I don't really want to be... That's not an ideal for me. Like, go ahead.
See, to me, that attitude is what is snobby and pretentious. It is my absolute honest opinion whenever I say that I thought Avatar was only okay. But isn't it kind of pretentious for the other person to say, well, since you know, why can't you just sit back and watch this? Whenever they really don't seem to know a lot about movies, well, you can't understand where I'm coming from. Why should you judge me?
A lot of times people get it's a defensive move because people feel threatened when you say something and make a reasoned argument that they don't understand. It's kind of a knee-jerk reaction that happens on a lot of subjects.
You know, and it's funny to me because it's not just it's not just about being educated. It's about your palate, too. I know people that have absolutely no education in film. They've never taken a single theory class, a single editing class, even just 101. They've never taken any of that. But they started watching, they started like a project where they were going to watch 3 Criterion Collection films per week. That alone gave them an education in films because they start noticing what good filmmaking is like. And so they then start comparing everything they learned from watching all those films. They compare that to, say, the last Kevin Smith film, and they realize, oh, this guy doesn't know jack shit about directing films. So the glaring flaws start to stand out, even just by watching good movies. You do get an education.
And you get this in every art form, too. You get it. There are Philistines in every art form. I mean, take food, for example. There are people who think that people who look down on Red Lobster are assholes.
Yeah.
I look down on Red Lobster. I am an asshole, but not for that reason.
You're too good for bottomless breadsticks and salad.
Yes, I am, damn it.
Well, I mean, I don't really see it as a case of being too good for anything, because I certainly love my fair share of movies that I know are flawed.
And I go to In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so, I mean, Bradley, like, surely you have, like, a stable of movies you would consider, like, I know this isn't good, but I love it anyway.
Oh, yeah, plenty. And a lot of anime as well.
And a lot of anime. And to bring this to anime... Do you think that attitude of why can't you just like it is more prevalent in anime fans?
I don't know. Not among my circle of friends, at least.
There are, to be fair, not a whole lot of anime that are completely artistically inaccessible and good.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, I can count them on one hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there have been times where I'm like, I mean, obviously everybody, a lot of people think I'm a huge snob about anime, and I am, I'm just really picky. Like, I'm difficult to please, I'm not an easy lay, like, it's...
That's also what happens when you've been watching this stuff obsessively for 15 plus years.
Yeah, well, it's your full-time job for 10 years, you start to look at things differently, but, so, I mean, is there a way to say, like, is there a way to have that conversation with your friends where you're like, well, here's what I didn't like about it. Can you educate these people? Can you say, like, well, here, think about it this way? Or will they just immediately dismiss you as being some kind of snob with some, you know, college boy who thinks he's better?
Well, I think it depends on the personality of the person, most importantly. But I think that no matter what, they have to find kind of their own curiosity to do this kind of studying that you have, or to watch the kind of movies that... inspire your opinion.
You know, it's funny, the last sort of litmus test movie for this line of thinking was the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland. Nobody I know that loves movies, that's into movies, that has studied movies, that is just kind of a fan, or I hate the term movie buff, but that's sort of apropos. They all hated that movie. But then... You know, I'll go online and look in like a movie forum, and there's some 15-year-old talking about, oh, I liked it. What's wrong with you guys? But every other film nerd in the forum is talking about how it was an awful movie, and it was a fucking terrible movie. I hated that movie. But there's sort of these litmus test movies where I'll walk out saying, that was the most retarded thing I've ever seen. And then the 15-year-old next to me is like, it was awesome. What's wrong with you? So
Mars Attacks.
Yeah. Mars Attacks. So I guess, I mean, I don't know. But that attitude isn't exclusively, you know, held by the youth. It's not just a young thing. I know plenty of adults who I've enraged just by suggesting there was meaning to a film. I mean, I think I pissed my dad off more than once by suggesting that James Bond movies are nothing but white male power fantasies.
Well, you know, some movies don't even need to have meaning to be good. Some of them are just very well executed. Like Casino Royale, since you're talking about James Bond. I thought that was a very good movie. Not because it had any particular meaning. It was just very well executed.
Well, that's the thing. See, when you do study this stuff, it's not that you're not capable of just sitting back and enjoying a fun action movie or a well-made action movie. But generally, you're not going to enjoy something as much if it's not well-made, if the editing's bad, if the director doesn't know the basics. You know, that's the things that ruin a film for people like us. And it doesn't ruin it for people that just don't notice that sort of thing.
And in some way, I'm jealous of those people. I mean, ignorance is bliss, let's face it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you can, if I am stuck in a room and Boondock Saints is playing, I would much rather be the person enjoying it than the person just kind of gnawing his arm off because the editing is so bad.
I don't know. I think I'm happier. I think I'm happier not.
You're happier being smart.
I'm happy. I'm much happier not having seen any of the Fast and Furious movies.
My point isn't that I'm happy to not see them either. But if I were the sort of person that enjoys them, and if I had to watch them, I would rather be the person that enjoys them. Is my point.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying there. Yeah.
I mean, if you were stuck watching Transformers 2, wouldn't you rather be one of the people enjoying that movie?
No, I pity those people. I was just going to say, what kind of life are you living? Like, how meaningful is your day-to-day when you wake up in the morning and you're like, yeah, Transformers 2 was pretty good. What kind of person are you? I mean, God, like, that must be a miserable, that must be a miserable existence. Like, I never want to be that person. That's horrible.
All I know is that movies can do things to me that it probably cannot do for those people. That's what I think. It's just a theory. I'm not those people.
Yeah, well, all we can do is theorize while sitting up on our high horse and looking down on the plebs who enjoyed Transformers 2. Okay, well, that was fun, Bradley. Thanks a lot for doing a little segment with us.
Oh, no problem.
Okay, man.
Come on, Cohagan. You got what you want. Give this people air.
Okay, up next we've got Robert from Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, man.
Hello, hello.
So
happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, we are taping this on Happy Drinking Day. So that's great planning on my part to record in the evening on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, if we get to our next caller and they're really sloshed, we'll know what happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be awesome. So what's on your mind, man?
Well, I am all way behind. I love sports anime. I pre-ordered. I actually bought every volume of Slam Dunk and pre-ordered and paid off Volume 5 from the website when they used to have that up. I mean, any sports anime that gets released, I really like to get behind it because I really love this genre.
Well, you're not enough to keep it alive, I don't think.
Yeah, it's basically you and me, and I think that's it.
Yeah.
I bought all of Hajime no Ippo on singles, too. I mean it. Like, I'm trying my best.
Jesus, you bought all 15 singles?
Wow.
Yes, and the movie.
what's your question?
Well, my question is, I guess, why are we having such trouble taking off with this genre? I mean, is it just people... Because whenever I talk to people about sports anime, they're like, oh, I don't want to watch Slam Dunk because I don't like basketball. And I'll say, well, it's not just basketball, or else, you know, you would just watch a basketball game.
Well, my response for that is, I hate to be the one to say this, but usually anime fans are the ones that are getting beaten up by the jocks.
Well, no, it's funny. I was just as hesitant to get into this genre as well. My brother actually got me Slam Dunk Volume 1 as a gag gift one time, and I watched it, and then I was blown away and, you know, bought the rest.
Slam Dunk is a gag gift?
Well, the joke was because... We got that Nintendo DS game. I keep using my hands. This is good radio. We're podcast. We played that Nintendo DS game with all the jump characters in it, and we just saw, what's the guy with the basketball doing in here before we were that too much into manga and anime? Slam Dunk's really the series that kind of really got me into seriously buying, you know, showing up all the time and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I think the fundamental disconnect is anime is for nerds, and nerds in general aren't into sports. And so these shows, and in Japan, these are mass audience shows. These are not otaku shows. They're not really lumped in with the rest of the, you know, what's considered to be, you know, anime for anime fans. These are mass consumption sort of things.
Probably the one maybe exception to that was Big Wind Up, and that was more for the girls.
Yeah, right. And you have this sort of weird disconnect of, and first of all, that shit is going to be unmarketable here in the States, because I think, being a nerd and having lived my whole life being friends with nerds, it's kind of a point of pride with a lot of people that they don't like sports.
Sure is with me.
You get the handful of oddities out there, like a nerd who's really, like, a lot of people I know that work in the industry that call themselves nerds are really, really, really into sports. So you get the weird anomaly every now and then. But for the most part, if you say you want to watch this anime about football, your average anime fan is going to be like, I don't like football, as you said. So yeah. I think that's where the disconnect is. It becomes this kind of perfect storm of a thing for this audience that audience is just going to reject on the face of it.
It goes beyond that, too. I mean, traditionally, sports movies don't do that well here.
Every now and then there's a hit.
But there are exceptions, but the overall rule is that those are generally considered to be riskier.
Right.
So I would argue that sports, and even the sports stuff that gets released here, it's not the sort of really over-the-top internal monologues that we would get from a sports anime, which I love. I love hearing that stuff. I eat it up. But in the sports movie in the U.S., it's never the internal monologue of the player. We never hear about tactics or anything. It's always stuff happening, and then there's a big game.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Actually, I remember being disappointed. I was so into, my father saw me watching like Champion Joe or Hajime no Ippo or something. He's like, oh, you should watch Raging Bull if you like boxing.
And well, I'm you like, should.
It is a good movie in its own right, but I was expecting, you know, that sort of sports anime fare. It really is different. I said this in the email I sent, but it's really like a character-driven plot, something like I compared it to Planets. I mean, even though that's in space, the characters are the focus in the sports anime. I mean, of course, there's exceptions here and there, but most of the time, I'm not reading Slam Dunk to see this awesome free throw. I'm seeing it so I can see Mitsui, or however the name's pronounced, make that free throw.
The thing is that sports anime is almost always very Japanese in mindset. It's literally a sports implementation of Japanese work ethic. Mm-hmm. That's what every Shonen Jump show is, and that's what every sports anime is. It's the characters having tunnel vision and focusing intently on being the best at what they're at and with what they're given, period. Americans constantly want to reinvent themselves. It's not, we don't really have that sort of concentration for the most part, just culturally. So I wonder if, I mean, it's kind of a miracle that Naruto's as popular as it is, because I guess it's ninjas beating the snot out of each other at the end of the day. Everyone can relate to that. But sports, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like a lot of those shows. I really enjoyed iShield 21. I mean, I like the comics a lot more than the anime version. And I would actually venture to say that, like, of the sports titles that I've... the sports anime that I've seen, I did like the comics better. Like, I guess just because the pacing felt a little bit better to me. It felt a little bit more on the spot.
I even like crappy sports anime.
I totally agree with that. iShield 21, the anime, I don't think can compare. And also, I mean, it makes sense, because, like, when one chapter in Slam Dunk's Hanamichi's first free throw, it's funny, it's goofy, you know, it's good for a week, just a chapter. But when you try to stretch that to half an episode, that's just too much.
Yeah. I mean, I got pretty bored with the last half of, say, a Big Wind Up. I mean, I liked it, but it got pretty boring.
I did, too. And then you have something like Touch, where one game will last three episodes, and you're on pins and needles the entire time.
Yeah, I've never seen Touch. I keep meaning to check it out.
But that might be one.
I like H2 better.
Really?
For Adachi stuff?
I haven't
seen
H2
I've only read the manga.
Yet.
I haven't seen the animes, like the anime series of these things.
So the manga. So you've got an audience now. For somebody who's resisted sports anime, what would you recommend they start with?
I usually go for Hajime no Ippo, because, I mean, it's just such a good show. And I always laugh because they'll say, I don't like sports anime. Have you seen any? No. Watch Hajime no Ippo. I haven't met someone who didn't enjoy it yet, and they're like, okay, well, I still don't like it, but you like 100% of the ones you've seen.
Yeah.
That's well, like a picky eater. Yeah. Do you like Indian food? No. Have you tried it? No.
That's exactly. I'm not trying to sound like I'm complaining. I understand. I mean, not everyone's going to like Hajime no Ippo. I mean, different strokes for different folks. But I mean,
the people that don't are just evil.
There's some good stuff that people are just too afraid to touch, in my opinion.
And some people just have poor taste.
Yes.
Okay,
I'm glad you guys are watching Legend of Galactic Heroes. I mean, that's good stuff. We're going to talk about good taste.
I was watching Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I've sort of fallen aside. Not that it's got bad or anything, but I did start to kind of doze off a little bit. Okay, man. Well, thanks for coming on and chatting with us about sports anime. That was cool.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Sure, okay.
Open your mind. Open your mind.
Okay, like we did last time, we've got some letters from some folks that we just didn't get to in previous shows for whatever reason. So here's one from Jeff Lott. With websites like Crunchyroll, Hulu, YouTube, etc. streaming anime within a week or so of the release in Japan, is there any chance of similar deals happening for manga so that the fans can read the most recent chapters without resorting to scanlations? If this couldn't work for a free site, could you see the translation companies offering a subscription service to offer this kind of thing? What do you think?
I think, well, things are going to have to go in that direction, first of all, simply because magazines, this is a magazine-dependent business in Japan, and magazines are just down everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the internet. People are not spending nearly as much time reading print material as they used to. They're looking at their phones. They're, you know, surfing the web on their iPhone or whatnot.
Yeah.
You
no longer need a newspaper for the train.
Exactly. So they're going to have to do something. And the manga companies, the publishing companies, both in Japan and America, they've been very technophobic. They've seen the internet solely as a means for piracy, and they've been historically very closed off with trying to do anything new. Now, they're going to have to change, and I think they're starting to realize that. And as the old people start to retire, get forced into retirement, the younger kids that have only known a world with the internet are slowly taking over. And we'll see something. I just don't know what.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm still sort of a Luddite when it comes to reading books online, especially graphic novels. I just like the texture of the page. I like to hold the book. And not only that, like, it's just easier for me.
See, I hate that.
You hate holding a book?
I hate holding a book. It is...
Do you hate, like, breathing? That's such a weird thing to hate.
I'm not too fond of inhaling. I like exhaling.
I see.
This is worse with hardcovers, I'll be honest. Softcovers, eh. But there are definitely times when I'm like, I can't get in a comfortable position. I hate the feeling of the print of the newsprint on my fingers. Yeah, I don't like it physically.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm probably never going to, I mean, actually, that's not true. 10 years from now, when there are no books and I have to read everything on a digital reader, sure.
If I was rich and Kindle was twice the resolution, I'd buy one in a second.
Yeah, I'd give it a shot. I don't know, it's just like, I personally like don't like the idea of, especially reading manga on a phone. Like, I just, no, thank you.
Yeah, well, the manga isn't formatted for something that small, it's just not.
Yeah, but apparently the Japanese enjoy that.
Hey, they're gonna push that square peg through the round hole if it kills them.
Yeah, but in terms of like a Crunchyroll for manga, first of all, I think publishers are going more towards the Kindle type book downloading sort of a service.
Yeah.
They're not really going in terms of simulcasting manga. I don't see the publishers going there.
Well, let me put it another way. Internet display ads, they, you know, $2 to $3 normally or less for a thousand appearances.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. That's a lot of ads that you would have to push in order to get one graphic novel sales.
Right.
You know, the economies of scale are so different. I don't think ad-supported would work right now. Maybe in distant future, but that's all speculation and no one really knows.
Yeah, I think some of this is jumping the gun a little bit. Because, yes, while we know scanlations are a problem, as has been said on this show, part of me doesn't think that the publishers need to leap into doing, you know, streaming scanlations for people, like instant next day translations. Like that market, they're not necessarily the ones buying books, I don't think.
They're definitely not the ones buying Kindles.
Yeah, they're not buying Kindles either. So, yes, there will always be the speed freak teenage crowd that, you know, they have to have it right now. And if you're not serving their need for instant gratification, then you're not going to get their money. I just don't see publishing going there. I don't see it going that way. Eventually, you extrapolate that out, and it's like, well, can we have a service where each new chapter of the next Twilight book is streamed online for people who don't want to wait for the book to come out? It's like, eventually, like, I don't think publishing's ever going to go there. Maybe it will. I don't know.
Well, publishing, this is much like the fan sub dilemma. This is kind of a rare duck in the publishing pond.
Yeah.
I mean, what other book comes out in other countries first that people can easily adapt?
Yeah.
Even light novels don't really work like that.
Well, we should say that Viz is attempting this. They are putting a few chapters up of the new Rumiko Takahashi thing
right
online, and you can get those a couple of months. And then I had people...
Bad no one cares about it.
Yeah, well, then I saw people like saying, like, oh, I wish they wouldn't do that because it ruins buying the book for me. Because then I buy the book, and I'm like, yeah, I've already read this. And they don't really want to read it again. That happened a lot with Arara, whatever the new Uwatase thing is. A lot of the comments were like, yeah, I read three chapters of this online and I bought the book, and it's like, I've already read half of this book. So I'm not sure it's working, even in the tests that they're doing. I'm not sure it's working out. Mm-hmm. I think most of the people who buy manga like to buy a book.
I know a lot of people who just have a lot of... they take a lot of pleasure in seeing their piles in their bedrooms.
Yeah, they really like that sort of thing. Bibliophiles.
Right.
That kind of a thing. So I don't think those people are ever going to switch over wholesale, nor do I think the Scanlation crowd can be monetized as I don't see that working as a business model. Like, maybe, I'm just speculating here, but I don't think, in my head, when you say Crunchyroll for manga, I say bad idea. Like, not you're not going to make any money.
Crunchyroll's not making money.
Yeah.
So, manga is even going to be even harder to monetize.
Yeah. So, I guess, interesting idea, but I don't think so.
Maybe distant future, but not for now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, moving on.
You got a lot of nerve showing your face around here, Hauser.
Look who's talking.
Hey, Tony, give the big guy a break.
Relax. You live longer.
All right, up next we've got Alan from Norfolk, Massachusetts. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how are you guys?
Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, no problem. Glad to be here.
So, what's on your mind?
Well, I was hoping to talk with you guys a little bit about the, not so much the anime industry, because there's been a lot of talk about that, more so about the dubbing companies, especially for the California-based anime companies. There's been a lot of talk about the anime industry compression, or collapse, I guess, but I never really hear anybody talk about the dubbing companies themselves and how they're adapting to this.
Well, many of them are no longer in business.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Some of them just straight up aren't around anymore. I think the hangers-on are mostly Bang Zoom, which is hanging on for dear life at this point, according mm-hmm. to what we've heard. And New Generation is still around, although
they're only doing video games, right?
They've done some anime, but I can't talk about it.
That's fine.
A lot of people have moved on to video games. That is where a lot of the work has gone.
Yeah, New Gen gets hired a lot by Square Enix, right?
Yeah, they do a lot of Square games.
Yeah.
I don't think they get the AAA stuff, like the new numbered Final Fantasy game. Like, they don't get Final Fantasy 12 or 13 or whatever. But they do get some of the side titles and a lot of their sort of B-level stuff. And there's a lot of that stuff, so good for them.
I was saying, and they did Street Fighter 4, which was probably a big title for them, too.
Yeah, they did. They really enjoyed that, actually. But they are still kicking. But those two are kind of... really sort of it. I don't know if Animazement is... I mean, they do Naruto and that's it, right?
They also do a lot of games. No, they don't do Naruto.
That's Studiopolis.
Yeah, Studiopolis.
Oh, whatever, yeah.
Let's see. NYAV Post, they've actually been diversifying into American animation quite a bit. You know, Sir Nicholas is... obviously, he was in Kappa Mikey and Venture Brothers, and he's been working on a few American projects as well. What else is there? They've also been doing work directly for Sunrise.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did Gundam
Unicorn.
Gundam Unicorn and Kurokami.
Yeah, I guess so to answer your question, I mean, or at least expand on it, like, yeah, the studios have felt the deep hurt. Bang Zoom specifically, we've heard many stories that we can't repeat, but they are struggling. I mean, I haven't heard, like, really good news out of Bang Zoom in, I would say, a couple of years now. It's been a little while.
When you think about how fewer shows... I mean, there are months that go by without a non-Texas dub.
Yep.
Months.
That's true.
And so, you know, there is clearly not a whole lot of work going around. So either you diversify and you do other things, or you simply don't have a business anymore.
Yeah, I'm looking at these the companies you were talking about. I mean, Bang Zoom, the last thing I've seen come out of them anime-wise is Morimoto. Yeah. Probably, and they might have the new Haruhi. We have to assume. We know Bang Zoom. Bandai has licensed it. And yeah, as far as anime, it's the last thing I can see them doing is Code Geass, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that dub was done a while ago, even if the DVDs aren't all out yet.
Yeah, I actually sat in on the recording session for Morimoto, and that was 2-3 years ago, so that was a while ago for them.
Yeah, that was done under Genion.
Yeah, when they still existed.
What does that tell you?
So are you a big dub fan?
I'm a huge dub fan. I love the industry, and I love, you know, looking at the companies. I love them, honestly.
So are you one of these guys that won't buy it unless it has a dub?
No dub, no sale.
Not necessarily no dub, no sale. No license, no watch. That's definitely my thing. But I've picked up one or two sub-only releases from Sentai. But other than that, yeah, dubs are big for me.
So what's your criteria for like a good dub? Like, name some of your favorite dubs.
Ooh, that's weird. Because it's weird because my favorite shows are definitely different than my favorite dubs. One of my favorite dubs that I've heard is the dub for Beck.
That's a good dub.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I'm an actor, so when I look at dubs, I look for things like realistic dialogue. And I've looked at a lot of the shows I've watched, thinking, wow, these are great shows. I've gone to them a second time. I've said, wow, this dialogue is either really stilted or really. It's not so much that it's been adapted, it's translated and tried to fit into the lines. So I look for, that's the thing I look for, is relationships. I mean, my director, whenever I act in something, always tells me the things you need to do are breathe and listen. I don't know how much breathing comes into effect when you're in the booth because you have, you know, time between your lines. But listening and response is really what I look for in a dub.
Which is hard because, you know, everyone records separately.
Definitely. I mean, obviously there are some horrible dubs out there like Garzy's Wing or stuff like that, but what I tend to see is mostly in the middle. I'm trying to think of another really good dub that I really like. I thought Welcome to the NHK had a really good dub. I thought that Chris Patton really exploded in a good way on that. I thought he was fantastic.
Agreed.
See, I didn't watch that show dubbed.
I love that show dubbed. I don't think I could go back to the sub on that.
It's my thing where if it's a show about Japanese people set in Japan, I'll watch it in Japanese. Just because it feels more natural to me, I guess.
I default to laziness.
Justin, you were talking about Honey and Clover and how you really preferred the sub to the dub just because of you didn't think the dub was well fitted to that show. So I mean, I can agree with that to some extent. I just, you know, loved Welcome to the NHK dub and Beck.
I don't know. So do you find yourself getting sick of the same like seven guys that are in every single dub?
I do and I don't to some extent. I mean, when they announce cast lists, I oftentimes find myself going, ugh. You know, now that the studios in California are becoming more video game oriented, and I don't know how well, you know, Bang Zoom and animes or who does Monster Salami, I don't know how to pronounce it. Wow. I don't know how they're adapting, but especially now that there isn't a lot coming out of California, I'm finding myself less and less doing that when, you know, oh, look, Johnny Bosch has been cast in another show. And I love Johnny Bosch. I think he's had some great performances. More so with the Texas dubs. I love Funimation. They're basically supporting the anime industry, holding it up right now. And I think they've done a good job doing shows. I mean, you know, now that they're sort of big, I expect, you know, Todd Habercorn will be cast in a show. And I expect that Greg Ayres will probably pop up somewhere in a couple other titles. Or I'm trying to think who their other really big regulars are. Let's see, Jeremy Lay has become big, stuff like that.
You know,
but I don't so much mind. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, what seems to make a good dub, in my opinion, is often the how much effort they put into the rewrite. I mean, when I was at CPM, there were a couple of our dub vendors that I would watch just print out the subtitle script and slam the voice actors in the booth sight unseen. And just have them read the subtitle script, and if the line didn't fit, they would add a word. That would happen right. A lot. And you could tell.
Oh, I was going to say, which is why I've always, you know, I'm reading a lot of times when I look for things to buy, I do read your guys' reviews, and I love your reviews. And one of the things I see in a lot of the older reviews especially are talking about Funimation's dub, how it's loosely adapted. And I've always thought to myself, well, it's loosely adapted, but it doesn't matter so much to me as if the story gets told and if it flows. And I think that really speaks to your point, Justin. I think that it's you know, if it's well adapted and it tells what it's supposed to tell, it's going to be a lot better than if you cram the subtitles in there. Like, I was watched the first episode of Eureka 7 again the other day, and I don't know, I forget how it gets to the end of the series, but the first episode, it seems that a lot of the way they're speaking, it comes back to that whole listening thing, just seems to be almost translations of the Japanese.
Yeah, for me, the key is natural-sounding dialogue. You know, does this sound like people talking, or does it sound like somebody trying to match lip-flap and reading off of a page? And Funimation's gone a long way towards trying to introduce that sort of natural cadence and flow of dialogue into most of their dubs with their rewrites. And, you know, I applaud them for that. Sometimes it doesn't work out perfectly, but more, I think that's really good for them. And I'm happy that there doesn't seem to be a lot of complaining about the rewrites. Like, people aren't screaming about purity because they realize, okay, this sounds so much better and it flows so much better.
I tend to think of dubs kind of almost as a separate derivative work, almost like a remix of a song.
Yeah, I still don't like voice actor commentary tracks, though.
Yeah, those are freaking death. Although subtitling a Japanese voice actor commentary, million times worse.
Yeah.
Well, when you see the huge crowds that those voice actors get at conventions and stuff, you can see why, you know, commentaries might be important as a company to put on there.
I mean, huge crowd, you're talking 300 people, but...
Well, a huge crowd, you're also talking about, you know, 15-year-olds who are flocking to the one quote-unquote celebrity that speaks English there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I asked you about your favorites, but any good dubs you've seen lately?
Dubs I've seen lately.
Or bad.
That's a good...
Bad dubs.
Or bad. The only bad dub, again, I mentioned earlier, I bought Guardsy's Wing specifically to watch it badly dubbed. It was hilarious. I'm not much one for – you talked about it on the last podcast, I think. Not much one for ironically viewing things, but that was one I can definitely say I enjoyed, if not ironically. In terms of good dubs, I'm trying to think what I just got in the I've been watching some a lot of California stuff. I was watching Ghost in the Shell recently. I thought that was – it's not new. The Ghost in the Shell, the series, the standalone compilation. I thought that was really well dubbed. I'm actually watching Soul Eater, and I know cliche shonen show, but I thought that Soul Eater had a fantastic dub. I thought it had a good dub. I thought it was very good.
One of one of my hobbies is UK dubs, and they're not recorded so much over there anymore, but in the late 90s they were, and there are some wonky ones, but I really enjoy wonky British dubs because they're British people trying to sound American.
If you were to recommend a British dub, which one would you recommend?
Angel Cop.
That seems to come up a lot, Angel Cop.
Well, it's because it's one of those fun, ironic titles. But if you want an actual good British dub, I'd say Pat Labor 2.
Labor, that's another one. We were talking about that a couple episodes ago. Good show. I'm trying to think of other good dubs I've seen. It's weird because a lot of shows, you know, it's almost, I was watching Gurren Lagann actually, and that show actually lended itself very well to the sort of not natural speech. It was weird because, you know, I'm watching it. I thought Kyle Aber especially did a fantastic job. But, you know, no one speaks like... The show is written in a way that no one speaks like the characters on that show. So I thought that one lent itself well to that style of adaptation.
Yeah, you know what show had a good dub? Heat Guy J.
Well, but yeah, I was reading your reviews. You guys gave it all A's. So.
We're introducing a drinking game because we seem to mention Heat Guy J on every single episode of the show. So... It's kind of a running
joke. Takahashi.
It's kind of a running joke at this point. Okay, man. Well, hey, listen, thanks so much for coming on and talking about dubs with us.
Oh, no problem. I love talking. None of my friends like dubs, so that's great to talk to somebody.
Who gives a shit what you believe? In 30 seconds, you'll be dead. Then I'll blow this place up and be home in time for cornflakes.
Okay, up next we've got a guy who's written for Anime News Network, Michael Fitzgibbon from otakurevolution.com. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. So, how have you been? How's the stress level?
I'm a little less angry at this hour of the day.
Okay. And what's on your mind, man?
Well, I've been reviewing two shows for my blog.
Right, Otaku Revolution.
Yeah. And the two shows I've been currently reviewing on a regular basis are Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood and Dragon Ball Kai.
Okay. And you've been just reviewing the, I guess, the streams of one and the fan subs of the other?
Yeah.
So you're killing the industry.
Hey, I plan to support the industry by buying Dragon Ball Kai.
Now, that surprises me because I've seen a lot of negative comments from you about that show, about how it's edited, and you hate the famously you hate the Dragon Ball dub, right? I know you do. I have seen you rail against it so much in the forums.
Dragon Ball Z does not have a great dub. it's very reversioned, shall I put it. I think it's kind of watered down. And not that Dragon Ball Z is an extremely intelligent show to begin with, but it's very... They tried to make it into an American cartoon really hard.
Right, and it succeeded. The show makes mountains of money.
It does, but I think they could have really done nothing to it, and it would have made just as much money.
Well, okay, but you can get a version that has had nothing done to it, right?
But Funimation makes dubs that are... they now make dubs that are honest and genuine and, you know, are just English versions of the Japanese show, and that's not what they do with DBZ.
Yeah, DBZ did kind of, you know, have it rewritten very liberally.
Right.
But that was also kind of a product of its era.
Yeah, that was 15 years ago or whatever.
I don't know. There were better dubs back then.
Name one.
A lot of terrible ones. He's right, though. There were.
Ronin Warriors?
No, I know. I'm just giving you a hard time. So with Dragon Ball Kai, now I've seen a few episodes of it, and I liked it a lot more than regular Dragon Ball, because it felt like they were just getting on with it. Like, it's not so much filler. Pacing. Yeah, it's much better pacing, but I saw you mention that you were sticking with the Dragon Boxes, and you weren't going to go with Dragon Ball Kai.
Well, it's going to come off like I'm defending filler, which I hope it doesn't, because I'm not really defending filler, but it feels like this isn't really the Dragon Ball Z that was made for me, you know? When Funimation first licensed DBZ and they aired it on TV, there was so much material missing from it and taken from it. I think it was during when Saban was, you know, dealing with the distribution on television. So they cut a lot of stuff out. And now here comes this new version with even more stuff cut out. And it seems like the same people who were complaining about the first version are now excited about this version, and it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's sacrosanct because it's Japanese. It's not dirty, soiled by American hands.
Yeah.
It seems like to me, if I was interested in a version of Dragon Ball Z with stuff cut out, censorship, and new music, then I'd go and buy the Pioneer DVDs.
The Tree of Might and whatnot, yeah.
Well, actually, the movies, famously, were not censored or really had any cuts.
Yeah, it was really the Saban stuff that you're...
Yeah, the TV series had stuff cut out of it.
So what you're saying is, ironically, Dragon Ball Kai, maybe not ironically, is closer to the super hacked up version that everyone complained about back in the day.
Yeah, pretty much. And there is censorship even on the DVDs and Blu-rays. I don't think a lot of people know that.
What's been censored? That's not just part of... Like in terms of like just what aired on TV, like what's been censored?
Everything you see on the TV version of Dragon Ball Kai is the same stuff you see in the Blu-rays.
Right, and that stands to reason, though, right? Because that's the version of the show that they're presenting. It's not the DVD's uncut.
Well, they censor a lot of the blood, and, you know, there's a scene where Goku and Raditz get a beam through their chest, and in Dragon Ball Kai, there's, like, a burn mark.
But yeah, but again, like, that seems like that's what they set out to produce. Like, it's not, and you mentioned, like, this version of Dragon Ball, like, isn't for you because it's been so cleaned up and it's been so edited. So it seems like if they were to release, and maybe, Justin, I don't know if you agree with me on this, releasing an unedited version of Dragon Ball Kai on Blu-ray wouldn't make sense based on what they were trying to achieve.
What were they trying to achieve, really?
Yeah, what are they trying to achieve by censoring at this point?
Well, they're already cutting it for time.
blood coming from a giant chest wound is taking up a lot of time.
Hey, in Dragon Ball, everything takes up a lot of time.
I'm kind of with him on this. I'm not a Dragon Ball fan in any sense of the word, which is why I'm being so quiet. But if I was a guy who was a big Dragon Ball fan, maybe I would want fights to last less than four episodes each, but I would want to see every drop of blood. That's what I'm there for.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. So,
well, that's not my only problem with Kai. It's one of the problems, but
oh well. Do tell. What are the other ones?
Well, another thing is that it seems kind of. You remember the Zeta Gundam movies?
Nope. No.
Nobody does. Well, they mixed in the 20-year-old animation with like brand new animation.
Oh.
And That's what they kind of do in Dragon Ball Kai, but they don't even put in new animation. It's like retraced frames.
Digitally, of course.
You know, they kind of trace over, and there are certain little parts that are redone, and then you get that stuff mixed in with the old stuff, and it seems kind of lazy.
Right.
I have no doubt that the whole Dragon Ball Kai thing is an attempt to, you know...
It's more of a marketing thing than it is a refreshed version of the show.
Yeah, they're trying to reboot a franchise that was very popular while not spending the money it takes to redo a show.
Yeah. And, of course, it's working, but it just doesn't seem like the version for me. If somebody said, well, I prefer Kai, I'm not going to argue with them because, yeah, you can't really argue with a better pacing, but I just feel like it's not the DBZ that... I don't want to say that this is purely out of nostalgia, but it just doesn't seem like it's the version for me.
No, I get it. I get what you're saying. To me, it seemed like they were already trying to make a sort of shorter, sanitized version of the show, but I guess those two don't necessarily have to go hand in hand, shorter and sanitized. So, I get what you're saying.
Hey, kids programming in Japan is a lot more overprotective today than it was back when DBZ first aired.
Yeah, they've gotten a little more conservative, but I think actually that it airs at a different time now. I think it airs on Saturday morning. I can't recall when it aired the first run.
But, probably Saturday morning.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, like
you'd have to ask. You'd have to ask like Vegito EX.
Right. So the other show that you sort of critique is Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. Now, I've heard wildly divergent opinions on Fullmetal Alchemist, and it seems to me that people who are really big fans of the first show just can't get into Brotherhood because it's just so much of the same, and they feel like they've seen it before.
I'm one of those.
Yeah, me too. I just haven't been able to get into it. I will be watching the Blu-rays when Funimation puts them out just to give it another shot. But what's your take on that show?
I love all versions of Fullmetal Alchemist. I'm not the type of person... I'm the rare person who doesn't have a preference.
So you know? you're really enjoying Brotherhood.
Yeah, I love the first series. That's what's got me into Fullmetal Alchemist. And I read and I buy the manga, and I plan to get this too. It's pretty good.
I have to ask this because I feel like I haven't given the show a fair shake. The big pull for me for watching it would be spending more time with Ed and Al, two characters I made a good connection with and I want to, you know, I wouldn't mind spending more time with. Are they still themselves or have they changed at all?
They're pretty much the same. I think Alphonse is actually a little more active in this series.
Well,
he's given a little bit more, because I think in the first series, you know, he was always very secondary to Ed, and this time they seem to be sharing the spotlight.
Right. I don't know. I never thought Al was a very interesting character in the first series anyway, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. I never thought he was a great... interesting.
They introduce an interesting concept here, which is that Al's body, his armor body, could reject his soul, because those two things don't belong together.
Interesting. So, now, you also have been critiquing the dub on Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. Now, I have not seen it. How is it?
Oh, geez, you're going to ask me about a dub?
Yes, I am.
Because
you're one of the few people who will actually claim that the first Fullmetal Alchemist dub was crap, and you're one of the only people I know that feels that way about that dub, because
admit,
it was good and
I'm
you're
in
wrong.
The minority. I've kind of warmed up to it a little bit. You know, like, the first time, I was just, you know, full of rage about it. And now, it's still kind of, some of the performances annoy me. I'm not a big fan of Vic Mignogna as Ed, but... I think, especially the past few episodes that have aired on Adult Swim of Brotherhood, the dub hasn't steadily improved.
So you think the dub for Brotherhood this time around so far is better than the original?
The first two episodes were pretty bad. And then I'd say the third episode was about as good as the first series dub. And 4 and 5, which just aired, are better, in my opinion.
Well, I'll have to give it a shot. I haven't decided.
I have very strange opinions, so...
Well, once the Blu-rays show up, I'll pick one. Okay, man, anything else?
Well, people can find my rants and raves at otakurevolution.com.
And occasionally on Anime News Network.
Yeah.
Every now and then. All right, man, well, thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
See you at the party, Richter!
Okay, next up is Christian from Arizona. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
not so bad. We are at the end of a long show here, so what's on your mind, man? What would you want to talk about?
Well, Hollywood's taken a recent interest in anime all of a sudden with shows like, or with movies like Astro Boy, Dragon Ball, Speed Racer, and Hollywood movies have a very broad reach, and they can reach a lot of people. And so, could these movies about a culture and a genre that the average moviegoer has probably never even heard of, and to see these types of films, could their interest be probably piqued into making them want to find out more about the root, so to speak, of where this movie came from, or would it be more of a hindrance because of these movies' less than stellar performances?
If they're like Dragon Ball Evolution, I'd say hindrance.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that 3 years ago I would have told you what a great thing this is and how positive it is that Hollywood is taking an interest in anime and how much money it could potentially bring into the anime industry and how much the Japanese could potentially stand to make some money off of this. And given that all of them have been huge failures, Speed Racer was a debacle, Dragon Ball was a debacle, Astro Boy shut Imagi Studios down, which came out on DVD this week, and I didn't know until I walked into the store. Like, they're not even advertising that DVD. Like, I have not seen one ad for it.
And that was Summit, right?
Yeah.
Summit knows how to spend money to market stuff. They have chosen not to.
Yeah, so now I have to say Hollywood's probably running in the other direction from anime because, first of all, they're not in the business of taking risks at this point, as we've discussed on this program before. Hollywood is not taking risks right now, and anime is a risk now. It's not this potential. There's no potential. It's probably going to fail because we've had three and they're all failures.
I would say, well, the studios, I doubt that a big studio is going to fund something. Whether or not it gets funded independently, there's still some producers that are still chasing that that model. I do wonder if, one thing that has happened is that Dragon Ball was so bad that the Japanese side of things, the creators have gone, don't do that to my show. I like my property.
Yeah.
Hands off. But on the other hand, that industry really, really needs money. And if someone wants to do a remake, that I know of at least one new show in the last year that has been held back from licensing because they're still actively courting Hollywood remake rights.
Hmm.
So I don't think it's possible to give any sort of across-the-board assessment of where we're at right now. I think there's still people trying to chase after that model and people that aren't.
Yeah, I think like there's supposed to be a Death Note movie in the making that apparently at least 10 or 11 film companies in the United States have expressed their interest in handling that project. And of course there's supposed to be a Cowboy Bebop movie like slated for 2011 with Keanu Reeves as Spike Spiegel, however bad or good that may be. But
it's not going to be 2011. It's not in production yet. So
yeah,
no,
they're not really even in pre-production, are they?
Is that just kind of in a catatonic state at the moment?
I don't know. I mean, when that project is moving, we hear from those people.
Yeah, we know them.
And so we haven't heard from them since Halloween, really. So yeah.
And that's not the only one. There's, Gungrave was optioned. Obviously the two Akira movies with Appian Way.
Ergo Proxy,
forgot about Ergo Proxy. There are a ton of these projects in the kiln, and they're difficult to get off the ground, which is why it's taken so long for some to get made. I mean, Akira, they've been trying to get a remake of that going for 15 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I think of all of those, Death Note has the most potential because the Hot Topic crowd will eat it up. And if you get the right cast and you tell the story right and you make a decent movie, it could be a hit with the teenage crowd.
Do not use that leaked script, please.
Yeah, don't use the leaked script. But
right.
I think that's got potential. I think the real key here is the property itself. Speed Racer was likely a bomb because it's Speed Racer, which hasn't been popular in America for many, many decades.
Right. Dragon Ball probably is not suited to live action, just in concept.
Well, yeah, but even if they'd have made a good movie, they might have had some success. That movie was terrible. So, right. You know, I mean, it was god awful. So
a lot of that was probably due to Fox Atomic being an utter train wreck of a film division.
Well, and that was a victim of the writer's strike.
Right? And the writer's strike, but Fox Atomic never really released anything good ever.
Fox Atomic. Hey, at least they canceled that Revenge of the Nerds remake.
Yes, they did.
I remember their huge booth at Comic-Con.
Were already shooting that.
Yeah, so and the Astro Boy movie was mediocre. It was not anything special. The critics gave it kind of a shrug. So what we're looking at here is also a lack of good product. I enjoy the look of Speed Racer. I think that was a really ballsy movie. I appreciate it now much more than I did when I first saw it. And especially,
because you can watch it at home with mute on.
And especially on Blu-ray. It's a fantastic looking film and a really creative film too. And it was never going to connect with a mainstream American audience. It was not meant to be a summer tentpole, or at least it should not have been treated as a summer tentpole. So we haven't had a good one yet. There hasn't been like a mainstream, like if they make Ghost in the Shell with a mainstream sensibility, yeah, it might go somewhere. But you know, even the most mainstream of these titles, like that Priest movie that's in that's shooting, I think, that was originally supposed to come out this year, thanks to the failure of Legion, which is a very similar film starring the same guy who stars in Priest, that was a failure. So they pushed it back to 2011, like mid 2011 or something like that.
On that note of like trying to find a way to connect with an American audience, the Evangelion movie, which apparently is still in production, which I did not know about, but the Transformers movies, depending on how you want to look at those two, they've brought a lot of attention to like things like Evangelion, the mech kind of movies. Would, if they ever do get that movie out into the public eye, would that be able to be like the black sheep in a sense among these films?
Well, there's already three black sheep, so anything that's a success.
Also, the problem is a lot of studio heads don't see Transformers as a mecha property. They see it as a old
toy. Well, the giant robot concept.
No, they don't see it that way. They see it as an old toy property. So now they're greenlighting crap like Light Bright the movie. And, you know, I'm not kidding. There is, like, almost every Stretch Armstrong is actually in production. I think it's starring wow. Taylor Lautner.
Rubik the Amazing Cube starring Danny DeVito.
I mean, we're... Oh, dude, you think movies are bad now. Give it another year. We're going to see some garbage.
Yeah, so that I mean, Hasbro was a... Transformers is a success for Hasbro. It doesn't mean that giant robot movies are suddenly being snapped up. However, I would find it hard to believe that you wouldn't be able to make a persuasive argument to somebody, even if you're completely misrepresenting the property, which you would have to if you were selling it this way. But if you said, oh, look, giant robots, just like Transformers, audiences love this shit, you'd have to really misrepresent the property in order to get the money. And
something tells me that somewhere along the 3-year production process, someone at the studio is going to smell a rat.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't like Transformers at all.
Why is the protagonist in the fetal position for half the movie?
Is he doing what I think he's doing over that sleeping girl's body? I think and I will stick by this, I honestly do think Cowboy Bebop would have potential if they did it right, if they managed to put out a decent movie. It's already got a Western sensibility. I think it could possibly be good, and not only be good, but connect with audiences. I mean, audiences are hungry for good science fiction. It does sell. I mean, I don't think you can deny that. So if they make a good sci-fi action movie with a bankable star, Keanu Reeves is a bankable star, at least he sort of still is, it could go somewhere. And at this point, all I want to see is a financial success. I want to see money coming in, and then we might start seeing some real quality stuff.
I'd settle for a good movie.
Yeah. If it's good, that's good too. But, you know, if it gets out there and it makes some money and it generates some interest, and then Hollywood starts snapping up anime properties and making them, not just sitting on the license or whatever, you know, that would be a good thing. I still think money can come into the anime industry from that process, but maybe that's a long way off.
All it takes is one.
Well, probably takes more than one, but... Yeah, makes one. It takes one hit, and then they make 10 failures, I guess.
Yeah,
I can't wait for Honey and Clover, the American movie.
Oh boy!
All right, man. Well, thanks for chatting with us today. That was fun.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure thing. All right, that about does it for this week. We will see you all next week from Japan. And as usual, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. See you next time.